It's 2:59 p.m. You're listening to KTOO 104.3 in Juneau. It's time for a Juneau Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'm going to be your host for today. On the show, we're going to be talking with Brian Hulst from the Juneau Economic Development Council about the 2014 Storefront Stars. We'll talk with Jessica Edwards about the Southeast Alaska State Fair, which starts Thursday in Haines. We'll find out about Sitka's Home Skillet Festival with guest Nicholas Kalanen. Plus, we'll hear a short news story from KTOO's Lisa Fu. These guests, Writer's Almanac, Bird Note, music, and lots more for Tuesday, July 29th, 2014. Stay tuned. National Native News is up first.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. After a summer of long salmon closures and a weak chum run on the Kuskokwim River in Alaska, upriver tribes are asking for federal control of the fishery from the state. KYUK's Ben Matheson reports.
The Office of Subsistence Management in Anchorage is preparing to present the Federal Subsistence Board with information and a recommendation on whether to federalize the salmon fishery, which is currently under state control. Evelyn Thomas is the tribal council president in Crooked Creek, a community of about 100 people located 120 miles upriver from Bethel. She says her tribal council plans to pass a resolution in support of federalization. She says the state has not listened and went ahead with commercial openings.
They keep wanting to have openings for silvers when late chum run, when we haven't even gotten enough to put up. The subsistence users don't have fish yet. I know here in Crooked Creek, nobody has enough.
Gene Peltola Jr. is the Assistant Regional Director for the Federal Office of Subsistence Management. They are currently responding to a growing number of resolutions from tribes and groups who want to ensure they get silver salmon. His team is in the early stages of drafting a recommendation based on current and historic data related to silver salmon harvests.
There may not necessarily be an allocation between the federal qualified user aspect of it. So that's one of the parts we're reviewing now, is that we may not necessarily have a full 804 determination or analysis.
That refers to Section 804 of the Alaska National Interest Land Conservation Act, or ANILCA, which determines how to distribute a resource that isn't abundant enough for all subsistence users. His office went through a similar process this spring after the Nipusiak Traditional Council asked that federal managers limit Chinook harvests to Kuskokwim residents and make an allocation strategy. Peltola was not clear about what a federal takeover could mean for the controversial commercial openings and pointed to ANILCA. Both federal and state law include subsistence priorities. The state is expecting a below-average coho run and an above-average subsistence demand after weeks of closures this summer. For National Native News, I'm Ben Matheson in Bethel, Alaska.
The Oklahoma Indian Clinic hosted a Kids in the Kitchen camp Monday. 8 to 14-year-olds used a demo kitchen to create meals. Michelle Dennison is the clinic's health promotion disease prevention director. She says they learned safety skills like how to use a knife and proper hand washing.
They made their morning snack, which was a oatmeal peanut butter bar, and then they also made their afternoon snack, which was banana ice cream. For lunch, they did turkey and black bean tacos, and so part of that was just learning what temperature the meat needs to be at, how to cook safely, how to chop, and how to make the plate pleasing to the eye.
The course also addressed that many Native youth across the country are overweight or obese.
With healthy cooking, that gives you so many skills, and it really empowers you through your life to maintain a healthier dietary intake.
Dennison says children feel more invested when they take part in creating and cooking during meal times. Some tribal land has been approved for federal disaster relief. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has more.
South Dakota was hammered by severe storms in mid-June. A stalled low-pressure system brought very heavy rain, hail, and tornadoes to parts of the state. At least 90% of the city of Canton, South Dakota, had major home damage. Governor Detta Stuttgart asked President Obama for disaster relief for 12 counties, including part of the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation that lies in Corson County in northwest South Dakota. Under the declaration, federal money can be used for emergency work and repair or replacement of facilities damaged by the storms and floods. Federal funds are also available to develop statewide hazard mitigation plans. Officials with the Federal Emergency Management Agency say there could be additional designations in South Dakota, depending on a state request and whether such help is warranted by further damage assessments. For National Native News, I'm Gary Lundbull.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation, supported by Sacred Wind Community Connect, providing scholarships and internet training to the Navajo Nation and Pueblo of Laguna in New Mexico. Sacred Wind believes broadband can reinforce Native cultures and offer means for self-determination. SacredWindCommunications.com.
Not voting is not rebelling, it's surrendering. Your voice counts when you vote. First, you have to register. Find out more at nativevote.org. Brought to you by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Okay, my first guest on the show today is Brian Holst from the Juneau Economic Development Council. And first off, we're going to be talking about the 2014 storefront stars, but I'd like to welcome him to the studio. Hi, Brian. How are you today?
Fantastic, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
All right, and let's talk about the 2014 storefront stars first.
Great. This is a new program. It's the first year that we have been involved with the storefront stars, and it the story behind why this program exists, I think, is worth telling your listeners. It's all around this notion of a more vibrant downtown. So there's been a tremendous amount of interest currently and then over the years of making Juneau a great capital city. And all cities, capital city or not, need a really vibrant downtown. It's really important for community and economic development. And so what this Storefront Star program comes out of a businesses, business owners, stakeholders downtown, people who live downtown, that got together to talk about what are the different issues, what are some important priorities for us in improving downtown. And they wanted to focus on three areas. One was transportation, circulator, which we don't need to talk about today, but there's interest out there to create a circulator for downtown to move people around more easily. Housing downtown, and housing's an issue throughout our entire community, still is. And then another one was looking at the built environment and looking at how attractive is downtown, how well it works and when it's snowing and when it's raining. And so along those lines, there's some municipal infrastructure but there's also things that individual businesses can do. So the Storefront Stars program was a competition amongst businesses downtown to improve their storefronts, just to make it prettier, nicer, more attractive. Attractive buildings attract customers and attract business is the basic premise, but also in the context of a more vibrant downtown. So we got together with a number of sponsors, the City and Borough of Juneau Historic Resources Committee, the Princess Cruise Lines, the Tourism Best Management Practices, the Alaska Committee, the South Alaska Architects Association of America. And I'm not even sure they can say it right. I apologize.
Okay,
that's
fine.
I'm sure I said that backwards, but the Downtown Business Association. They're all looking for a way to be positive about making some improvements, because there's lots of rules on the books, and you could probably get somebody in trouble by saying you're not following this or following that. So they said, well, let's try to do something that is encourages people to do what's in their best interest and the best interest of the community. So we held a competition, and there was a winner for the best improvement that you made during this period of time. And we also had a People's Choice Award where people got to vote online. We chose to use Facebook as a mechanism. Not everyone has access to that, but lots of people do. And so that was how we chose to let people provide their input. And so last week, we had the fun of being able to announce the winner. And it's a neighbor of yours right around the corner. Twilight Cafe was the grand prize winner. And they right next to Bullwinkle's. It's a little cafe that is often not noticed by people. We found that, where is that? And I think it's part of the improvements that they made was they had a barricade, literally, in front of their building, which was I think nominally to protect it from a car parking and driving into the front of the building, but they were able to remove that and put on some beautiful plants, repainted the place, and it looks really sharp. Inexpensive improvements that made a big impact on how that business looked. So they were the first winners. That's Catherine and Arrow Cristobal. We also gave two honorable mentions, or also winners, but not, maybe not grand prize winners, to Bruce Abel down at the Willoughby. They have a building on Willoughby where Heritage Coffee is now located, or is located, has been located for some time, but they made some improvements to bring Heritage Coffee now to the front right on Willoughby Avenue. And so the front of the building looks really pretty, and so they got a mention. And Daniel Glidman also made some downtown, the Goldstein properties, made some awnings downtown. And they did something unique that they did is they put LED lighting inside the awnings. So as you, not only do you stay dry, but you get a little bit of additional light. So very, very clever. And then our People's Choice Award went to Annie Kales. And Annie Kales, they were just surprised that they won because they didn't have to do anything. But that was simply, you know, what is an exemplary storefront that people that would that we want to recognize is really contributing to the community. So hats off to them. They all take away small cash prizes. Actually, Bruce and Dan get a nice plaque only. But it's been a real positive event. We had some great publicity as well for it.
Did the facelifts result in an economic uplift for the affected stores or not?
You know, I think it's I think it's probably too soon to tell. But certainly, I mean, these businesses are all about you know, contributing to the community, but also doing well themselves. And I think that they know that making their businesses more attractive will attract more people and will attract more business.
I'm certain that it's the appeal to the residents that is the big thing, because, you know, we've got a lot of seasonal shops downtown, but very shortly those will be closed up, and then, you know, you got everything from the end of September back until the beginning of May.
Yeah.
So I imagine that these people are trying to do their best to encourage Juneau residents specifically to patronize their stores even in the off seasons.
That's great. And those businesses that are not open in the winter, this year we have a new program that's been started again with many of the same sponsors, called Winter Windows. And that is, again, trying to be positive. You know, there are some rules about how you're supposed to leave your window in the winter if you're not occupied as a business. And we're not in that enforcement area. But what we want to do is to encourage these businesses to leave behind, use some creativity, and leave behind really windows that will make all of us that are here all year round better enjoy our downtown. Good lighting, make it a little bit safer in our dark winter days as well. So that's going to be something that is taking shape now, which we hope to hope everyone will see more pleasant downtown, sort of the South Franklin area, more pleasant this winter.
Okay, does this springboard into the downtown revitalization program that you're going to talk about?
it's all part of that effort. And the Willoughby District, where we're sitting right now doing the show, is we hold quarterly stakeholder meetings with all the business and property owners in this area, because we're experiencing a revitalization of this entire area. The SLAM project is a giant project. The State Library Archives and Museum project is a big impact here. It's going to change the look of this neighborhood. We're seeing the Arts and Humanities Council with Perseverance Theater. They have plans for a new arts complex, which is in the works. We're seeing the investments at IGA, the Foodland. Some of the investments are visible, and you're seeing some additional investments. We'll be hearing about those over the next few weeks that they're making to improve this area. We see in the village, we see some renewed interest in but they've been engaged in how they're community interacts with the rest of this Willoughby District, and housing is an important issue. And so, not only are they meeting housing needs for generations now in the Willoughby District, but there's need for more housing in Juneau, and where is a good place to put it in the downtown area? And maybe some of that can fall within the Willoughby District as well.
Hey, Brian, and what other efforts does the Juneau Economic Development Council have in the works right now?
Well, you know, since we're talking so much about housing, I think it'd be good to talk about an event tonight, and I hope people can come out to it. And that's we're having a workshop this evening from 6 o'clock till 9 o'clock tonight at Centennial Hall. And this is a public workshop on housing and services for Juneau seniors. What we know is happening nationwide in the state and here in Juneau is that our population is aging, and we want to make sure that our seniors have a place to live in their old age here in Juneau. And the spaces are very limited right now, the options are limited. We see not only is it a good for our community to have these seniors around with us, it's great for them to be close to their families. And it's also an economic opportunity. It's a business opportunity to bring in developers that can provide this sort of housing for us. So there is in order to get the investment here, one of the things that JDC does is we try to work on these issues is to understand, well, what would an investor need to know? So there's a study going on right now. It's a demand study to determine what is the demand for housing services and housing for seniors. What is it now? What is it going to be over the next few years? So we have a firm that's working with us on that, with another set of partners. Funded in part by the City and Borough of Juneau and also led by the Assisted Living for Seniors group. The Juneau Community Foundation has contributed to this effort as well. And so tonight from 6 to 9, we're going to see some of the preliminary results of the study about the demand. But we also really want people to come down to Centennial Hall and participate because, you know, no matter what age you are, especially if you're 50-ish, come on down to be able to have some input on what you want your housing in the future to look like and help the consultants to be able to gauge really what is the demand out there. And there's a lot of ways of engaging that, but one way is directly talking to people that might be or that are in a position to potentially buy or rent housing as when they're seniors.
And you wanted to talk, too, about the STEM program.
Absolutely. One of the things that JDC does is focus on talent development, and that it can be done a number of ways through entrepreneurship education programs. One thing that we work on in Juneau and throughout the state is our science, technology, engineering, and math program. And we work in 25 municipalities across the state, and it's a really effective program that I think also brings the good name of Juneau to lots of communities throughout Alaska. But specifically in our own town, we like to have a disproportionate impact in here. And we have some summer camps going on, really high-quality camps. We have one next week called Engineering Adventures, targeted to third to fifth graders. Those kids are going to be in third next year to fifth grade next year to really focus on developing engineering skills. We have an engineer on our staff, Bernadette Rosana, who's going to be leading that camp. She's very talented, has her teaching credential, and also worked as an engineer for several years to help kids to understand and grasp and grapple with some engineering challenges. We also have Girls Rock Science, and that's for the 6th to 8th graders, sponsored by ALNP. That's coming up in a few weeks. The summer camps are on our website at jedc.org or our STEMAK org website. And those are great. We know they're great value because we're able to the amount of money that you pay to participate is offset by sponsors and other grants that we're able to bring. So your kids get a great value from these camps. So we encourage people to take advantage of them. We've been running these camps all summer. These are the last two opportunities for you to participate.
All right, Brian, and are there any other opportunities that you want to highlight? Well, I've got you here. Well, you've got a lot of stuff going on.
this is great. Well, you know, I think it's important to mention to people, remind people about the revolving loan fund at the Juneau Economic Development Council.
Right.
We saw front page headlines just the other day on the Juneau Empire of the Juneau Mercantile and Armory is now open. And that is a kudos to those business people that made that investment and evaluated that. We participated in that through the revolving loan fund. North Rim Bank and JEDC, we were able to give them a loan to be able to finance their building. And we're happy to be a part of businesses here in Juneau. We give out loans throughout the year So if you're interested in, you have a business idea and you you need some capital and perhaps where our program is most effective is sometimes with the banks, it's not quite have all the details that the bank wants. We're able to work with you, provide you some assistance, and then we are ideally we partner with the banks and put in some financing together to help your project happen.
All right. Brian Holst with the Juneau Economic Development Council, thank you very much for being our guest on the show today.
Thank you, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Tuesday, the 29th of July, 2014. It's the birthday of the newspaper columnist Don Marquis, born in Walnut, Illinois, 1878, who invented the characters Archie the Cockroach and Mehitabel the Alley Cat. It's the birthday of Alexis de Tocqueville, born in Paris, 1805. He was 25 years old when the French sent him to America to study the American prison system, spent 9 months traveling around the country taking notes. And a few years later, he published his famous book, Democracy in America. Alexis de Tocqueville, impressed by the fact that American democracy actually worked, he wrote, "America demonstrates invincibly one thing that I had doubted up to now, that the middle classes can govern a state, despite their small passions, their incomplete education, their vulgar habits. They can obviously provide a practical sort of intelligence, and that turns out to be enough." And it's the birthday of the poet Stanley Kunitz, born in Worcester, Massachusetts, 1905. His father committed suicide in a public park before Kunitz was born. His mother erased all traces of the father from the house, refused to talk about him. But she did not destroy the books that the father had left behind, including the dictionary, which became one of Stanley Kunitz's favorite books. He opened it up every day to find a new word. He liked big words like eleemosynary or phantasmagoria. His first job was riding a horse down the streets of Worcester and lighting the gas lamps at night. He became a reporter for the Worcester Telegram, went off to Harvard, stayed for his master's degree, lived on a big farm in Connecticut, worked as a reporter and a farmer, was drafted into World War II, became a teacher at Bennington College, where he refused to expel a student who the president of the college wanted to expel. And when the president of Bennington showed up at Kunitz's house, Kunitz took a potted plant and threw it in the president's face and then left for good. His third book came out in 1958, Selected Poems. It was rejected by 8 publishers, 3 of whom even refused to read it. And when it was finally published, it won the Pulitzer Prize. Stanley Kunitz, who said, "It is out of the dailiness of life that one is driven into the deepest recesses of the self." Here's a poem for today by Wally Swist, entitled Radiance. Over your gray and white oval marble-top kitchen table, the meeting of our eyes makes the room grow brighter. Our faces, layer after layer, become so vibrant the light appears to crest in waves. We have become changed by it. Nothing can be the same after it. When I bend down to touch the shape of deer tracks in the damp sand, it is in the same way I place my fingers over your body. When I stand beside a freshet in a meadow, the sun catches the rings of the water's long ripples in the wind. That is the same glimmer we hold when our eyes meet in the kitchen over your gray and white oval marble-top table. Every day, for the rest of my life, yours is the face I want to see when I awake in the morning. Radiance, a poem by Wally Swist from Wang Po and the Dimensions of Love, published by Southern Illinois University Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac. Produced by Joy Biles, assisted by Teresa Burgess. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
If you're a parent and you smoke, here's what one child has to say about this.
I wish you'd quit smoking because there's so much of my life I want you to be a part of, like taking me to wrestling practice, teaching me how to throw a baseball for Little League, watching me graduate from high school, and watching my kids, your grandchildren, grow and play. There is so much both of us will miss out on.
This message is brought to you by Alaska Island Community Services, Search, your partner in health, and the Partnership for a Tobacco-Free Southeast.
3:24 p.m. and a Juno afternoon continues. My next guest is Jessica Edwards, and she's going to be talking to us about the Southeast Alaska State Fair. Hi, Jessica. How are you today?
Hi, Ken. I'm doing great. How are you?
Very well.
All right.
And now, why do we have a specific state fair for just Southeast Alaska? I'm glad we have it, though.
Well, it's something that started here in 1969, and it's grown into a regional event. It grew up through the 70s and the 80s, and, it's just we have our own unique culture and our own unique lifestyles in Southeast, and I think our fair really represents that.
It sure does. All right.
Yeah.
And just briefly run down who the guests are, because we're going to get to a few of the other topics of interest here. But
sure. Yeah, no, we've got some great headlining entertainment this year. We've got a lot of buzz about a band called Elephant Revival. They're coming from Colorado. Beautiful music, really neat songwriting, very lyrical, melodic music. They're going to play Friday afternoon on the main stage. We've got a lot of people telling us they're coming up to see that band and, of course, staying, but that was the big draw for a lot of folks. And then we've got Split Lip Rayfield. They're a really hot bluegrass act out of Wichita, Kansas. They do the festival scene there, and they're just going to be great. I'm really excited to see those guys. They're from my neck of the woods where I grew up, so that'll be fun.
That's Wichita, right?
Wichita, yep. So, yeah, Vagabond Swing, too. They play kind of a gypsy jazz. They're going to be, it's a real rocking kind of music, though, and they're going to play Saturday night as well. We've got Hymn for Her, which is an Americana act out of Philadelphia playing. They're kind of a new one to last-minute add to the roster. We had a little switch-up in the middle there. And we've got Whiskey Dicks, which is a Celtic punk act out of Vancouver that's come up a couple times, and they love Haynes, and they come up. They've come up a couple years for the fair, so people may recognize them.
All right, Jessica, let's talk about some of the contests, events, and activities that are going to take place at the State Fair.
Well, I'm getting really excited because, of course, Thursday comes first of the fair. So our first contest is Thursday night. It's Southeast Got Talent, and this is has become a really fun event, both for participants but also for spectators. We draw great crowds on Thursday night. We've still got time to enter. So it's a talent show where we have an adult, best adult act or best youth act, and we have two $400 grand prizes. And we'll have up to 20 acts doing 3 minutes on stage, and we get everything from acrobatics to singing to storytelling to you name it. I think our only parameters are it can't be dangerous, it can't involve animals or fire. So we've seen a lot of fun stuff. So that's a great one to come early for if you're going to be in town. And we have a great spectrum of different kinds of contests all through the weekend. We've got a singer-songwriter contest that's Friday at 1. We've got an adventure race, which has become very popular. I think we had 75 people. It's a mudder race. You know, you kind of go over obstacles and under fences and all sorts of stuff. And then there's little people dressed as, this year it's the Unleash Your Beast race, so there's little people dressed as animals chasing the participants around the course and trying to wear a flag football flag belt, and they try to grab those. So that's become a fun one, but it's a little exhausting, I have to say, even to watch.
All right. Well, I think that the mutter thing should be, well, we're looking at some fairly dry conditions into the weekend. So actually, that's a welcome change. I'll be bringing that one on. So
I know. The forecast looks better and better. I have to say we've been really excited looking at those little sun icons on the weather forecast.
That's right. Sure. It's a luck out. All right.
Yeah, I know it.
And let's talk about the fairgrounds layout as opposed to where a lot of most people would arrive, which is a lot of people are probably coming up on the ferry to get there.
Right. Yep. So you get to the ferry terminal and you can take a taxi, or there will be borough shuttles that the borough of Haines will offer at uncertain departures, and that schedule is on our website at seekfair.org, or you can call the visitor center here in Haines. And then you can get to the fairgrounds pretty simply from pretty much most of the lodging in town is either walking distance or biking distance, or we have a nice parking lot here too. Here you can drive up to the main entrances, and then we admit through three gates. They're at the front of the property, and that's basically 42 acres of fun once you enter. We've got three main buildings. The central building is a pavilion where we have the main stage and the music. We have a big barn that houses animals. We'll have some animals on display for people. And then we have exhibits in Harriet Hall. So there's arts and crafts, and there'll be baked goods and things that have been judged over this last week in the hall for people to look at when they need a quiet moment. And we have lots and lots of vendors and food and games and rides and music.
Okay, let's talk about the food.
Okay, it's always a good topic. Always a good topic. Well, we'll have ice cream and fry bread and pizza and espresso. We've got, let's see, smoothies and corn on the cob and homemade desserts. We've got a Cajun booth this year. We've got sushi. We've got a great Mexican booth that does tostadas. We have to get a couple of those during the fair. And there'll probably be funnel cakes and corn dogs and all the things that people associate with fair food, too. So ice cream as well. Did I say ice cream? I always have to.
Fried ice cream or just ice cream?
I don't think, actually, that's a great, I don't think we have, I don't think we have fried
they,
ice cream.
They do that. They actually do fried ice cream.
I've had it at a Mexican restaurant in the past, but I don't think anybody's doing that here. But yeah, lots of great food options. I know that my parents' friends like to come and just eat. They come to the fair and they just eat.
Okay,
it's a trip in itself.
All right, additional vendors that are not food vendors. What do we have?
We have a lot of folks that come. I'll start with the retail. We have lots of shopping here, so we have things for sale like art, jewelry. We have a bead shop that comes. We have arts and crafts from Southeast Asia, so people who like beautiful knickknacks from other parts of the world. We've clothing. We've several clothing vendors. One's makes a activewear line that's all original designs, and then we have more of the sort of fair type clothes in another one. It's a variety of things. We have a one vendor that sells toys for children, and then I would say. The handmade arts and crafts is sort of the general theme if I had to categorize the retail vendors. And the other type of vendor that we have here, and they would maybe not be, would be information vendors, so people who are here to tell people about what they're doing. So we have the local newspaper and the preschool, Friends of the NRIA. We've got the University of Alaska Southeast. So there's a lot of information here on the grounds as well. You can learn about National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration's marine mammal enforcement program. You can learn about the mining operation that's happening here in the Palmer deposit up in the Chilkat Valley here. And we'll have some political parties and et cetera, et cetera. So there's lots to do. You can have lots of interesting conversations. There's lots of people to talk about like regional and local issues with here at the fair. They'll be here to answer questions and such. So you can't really do it all in 4 days. I feel like we need to have another week.
Well, you can try.
We can try.
All right, Jessica, and could you basically go over the different ways to get to Haines for the fair?
Sure. So from Juneau, you're looking at, there's pretty good ferries. I think the ferry will leave daily from Juneau and in the 7 a.m. range, and then it gets here right around 11:30. Our gates open at noon, so you're getting here at a good time. And most days, I believe the ferries are leaving again at 5 p.m. and headed back to Juneau. There's extra boats over the weekend, I think mostly on Monday following the fair. But it seems like some people are telling me they're coming and going in one day, but a lot of people are coming one night and then leaving the following night. So there's lots of options for people that way. There's also good airfare specials, I've noticed. You want to check with the local little carriers that come up here. We see planes from Alaska Seaplanes and Wings of Alaska coming up to Haines. So those are probably the three main options.
Okay. Would it be too late for people to arrange for accommodations?
You know, that's a good question. And I would encourage anyone who wants to try to suss out the lodging situation to call our local Haines Convention and Visitor Bureau. Their phone number is 766-2234. And they are excellent. They keep a running list of all of the rooms that are available in town. All the lodging folks call if they have cancellations and try to keep everybody up to date. So I have to applaud their efforts. They do a really good job with that. And then if you're willing to camp, there's always going to be a space. So if you're willing to tent it, and boy, the weather looks good for that.
That's right, because the last thing you want is a river going through your tent.
Right. I think folks are going to be in luck if they want to camp. So, yeah, I think it's, you know, and even if you want a camping space, the visitor center also helps. They talk to all the campgrounds as well. So they are on it for this event, and I would encourage people to call. And if folks can't remember that number, they can look online for the Haines Convention and Visitor Bureau, or we welcome calls to the fair office.
All right, Jessica, and can we go over the fair hours and the admission prices, too?
Sure, yes. If you're going to come early to the fair and stay through the whole fair, the best deal is to get a four-day pass. You can purchase those at the gate for $40, and that breaks out to $10 a day. So you can, and that includes all the evening concerts. So it's the cheapest way to go. If you're just going to come for one day, we have a Thursday admission price of $10, and Friday and Saturday cost $15 each, and then Sunday is $10. So 10, 15, 15, 10, and those individual day passes are available for purchase at the gates. The fair hours are, we open noon every day except Saturday. We open at 11:30, and that's just because people are done watching. We have a great parade downtown in Haines. It's a small downtown, but we put on a good parade, I think. Starts at 11, and then folks are generally done watching that by about 11:30. So we just open a little bit early to just let people come straight from the parade. And then the hours in the evening vary. We have a concert on Thursday that starts at 8, and so that'll probably conclude by 10 or 10:30, so that's an earlier night. And then Friday and Saturday will be around into the wee hours. So I'm not sure if we actually close. Yeah, we close, but it's late. It's early the next
we
day.
We close,
the
and then we reopen a half hour later.
We have to take a little bit more than a half hour to regroup, but yeah, it's late nights Friday and Saturday, and then 4 o'clock we conclude the fair at four, or sorry, Sunday we conclude the fair at 4 o'clock p.m. So,
Jessica, where can people go to get more information on the Southeast Alaska State Fair?
I would urge people to look at our website. It's seakfair.org. They're also welcome to call. We're running around a little wild, but we love to talk to people on the phone about the fair. So call us up. Our number is 766-2476. And then we've got, once you get here to town, we've got information on the ground. So we've got entertainment guides around. The Chilkat Valley News will be publishing an up-to-date schedule that's got all of the contests and different acts at different stages at different times, all in a big matrix. And they'll be handing those out at the gates and also at the, I believe they're going to maybe make it to the ferry terminal and try to get people there. But yes, website and call us, and we're really excited about the fair, and we can't wait to see folks come up.
All right, Jessica Edwards with the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines, thank you very much for being our guest today.
Hey, we appreciate the opportunity. Thanks, Ken.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right, and now we've got a song. I'm going to play one real quick from, this is actually from one of the guests at the Southeast Alaska State Fair. The group is called Elephant Revival. You might have heard Jessica talk about them briefly. And this is a song called Spinning.
Dance here in between the air and the silver moon. Them devils was only come to dream of this, I guess. For the saints come in with mirth and joy. They sure come in, dance up a storm. They're turning tables, reciting poems. They speak what comes off hearts and tongues. Hearts and tongues. Hearts and tongues. Well, you know they've been here once before. They wore the same old heavy coat. They seek no fortune, seek no fame. Just a few wild horses to tame. Hearts in town, hearts in town. For these hearts, these dreams, these webs we weave. These hearts, these dreams, these webs we weave. These hearts, these dreams, these webs we weave. These hearts. These dreams, these webs we weave. Only come to dream of this, I guess. For the saints come in with mirth and joy. They sure come in, dance up a storm. They're turning tables, reciting poems. They speak what comes off hearts and tongues. Hearts and tongues. Hearts and tongues. These dreams, these webs we weave. These hearts, these dreams, these webs we weave. These hearts, these dreams, these webs we weave. These hearts, these dreams.
It's 3:41 p.m. You're listening to a Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 in Juno. That was Elephant Revival with a song called Spinning. They described their music as a mix of gypsy, rock, Celtic, and folk. And they're going to be the main stage show Friday evening at the Southeast Alaska State Fair in Haines. And for more information, I guess you can get a hold of them and find out what else is coming up for the state fair. They got lots of guests and lots going on. But my next guest is actually from the Sitka's Home Skillet Festival. His name's Nicholas Gallinan, and that's not this weekend. That's coming up on the 8th and 9th of August. So these two things do not overlap. All right, Nick, how are you doing today?
I'm great. Thank you for having me.
Okay, it's great to have you on the show. And tell us about Sitka's Home Skillet Festival that's coming up August 8th and 9th.
This is our 9th annual festival, so it's been going on 9 years. I think I've probably got one more year in me to do maybe 10 years of this, and then I don't know if I'm going to keep it going, so don't miss these last 2 years. We have lots of amazing artists coming from all over, including some local Juno bands that I'm really excited to include in the lineup. That's the Woolpolers and, of course, Playboy Spacemen. So.
All right, and tell us a little bit more about the Home Skillet Festival. It's going to be the 8th and 9th.
Yeah, 2 days. This year it's outdoors at the Sea Mountain Golf Course, which is actually a very beautiful spot to have the festival. All we're asking is that you bring some sunshine or extra dust.
You might need both of them, really.
Yeah. So, yeah, it'll be 2 days of music, all ages. You can find tickets online at homeskilletfest.com. If you also go to our webpage, you can learn a little bit more about all of this year's guest artists that will be performing and where they come from. I've posted some playlists from Spotify of the music that these wonderful musicians are making, so you can get familiar with some of their songs as well.
And as far as accommodations go, do you know what's still available in Sitka? I know they're really limited as far as any hotels and bed and breakfasts.
Yeah, I'm not sure what is available for, you know, we have a hostel here, and that's probably a good cheap option. That's located right downtown. And then, yeah, of course, the local hotels as well. Our camping, you can probably find a spot to camp. If you have transportation, there's campgrounds out both ends of the road.
All right, and can you highlight some of the other artists that are going to be there at the festival this year?
Yeah, so we I do all the curation of the events and of the guest artists that are coming through. And this year we have Budo. His name is Josh Karp. He's coming out of Seattle. He's a multi-instrumentalist. He tours with Macklemore, actually, and he also plays with several other successful bands. But he's amazing. Just one man, you know, making so much great music. We also have Vox Mod, who's produced out of Seattle, that is also going to be a, kind of a one-man act on the stage there. High Tech Low Lives, it's a really exciting, well, they're a trio out of Seattle as well on my friend's record label, Cabin Games, that just is also kind of a fresh new label that's doing exciting things. So High Tech Low Lives is, yeah, really beautiful music. I think it's hip-hop influenced, punk influenced, and I think you should definitely check out their latest album that they'd released, Humanoid Void, it's called, and that's their debut album. We debut a lot of artists at the festival. Some of the artists in the past have their first performances were at Home Skillet Fest. So, you know, Iska Doff, they had their first show, I believe, at our festival, and then also Kingdom Crumbs, a past artist that's come up. So,
Nick, what are the hours of operation for the festival?
Oh yeah, we're 6 p.m. is when the doors open and the music starts, and it'll go till midnight. So there's a beer garden, all ages. There'll probably be some transportation available to you to get into town. We generally do after-show parties afterwards in town that go from midnight till late. The Larkspur Cafe is usually one spot that'll host some of these live jam sessions, and maybe the Westmark Hotel as well. They're one of our big sponsors, Westmark Hotel, Totem Square, and really really great that they donate rooms to accommodate all these guest artists that come to town. So that's Nick, one of the challenges of doing this festival. So,
Nick, do we have any food vendors or other vendors that are going to be there?
There will be some vendors there. The golf course will probably be doing something. Usually they have some food available as well. So, yeah, again, it's all ages. So, you know, the children have a really good time as well. Benjamin Verdos is another artist that I should mention that's coming, really beautiful songwriter and singer-songwriter from the band Iska Doff. This is his solo project that he's going to be performing, though. So, Jesse Huey, he's a local Alaskan musician that now lives down in the Seattle area that has a really wonderful album coming out. So, Eric Blood, another artist I should mention. So, but yeah, I think beyond talking about these artists, just go to homeskilletfest.com and discover them for yourself. You know?
Okay, Nick, so they can go there for more information and to buy tickets, correct?
Yeah, everything's there. And we'll have a bunch of new hoodies and sweatshirts available at the festival this year as well.
All right, Nick Gallinan from the Sitka Home Skillet Festival, thank you very much for being our guests on the show today.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and I hope Juno shows up in numbers to attend the festival.
Okay. Well, I'll do my best to encourage them to make the trip.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, Nick. Thanks a lot. All right. That was Nick Gallinan with the Sitka Home Skillet Festival. And again, that is coming up August 8th and 9th. And I'm going to play a song right now by Juno's very own Wool Pullers. This is called Juno What I'm Saying, and they will be one of the guests at the festival this year. Well, that wasn't quite the Wool Pullers here, but here they're coming here with Juno What I'm Saying. Juno's very own Wool Pullers with Juno What I'm Saying. And stay tuned. We're not done yet for today. Coming right back.
My name is Kathy Ellen. I'm a volunteer who hosts Thursday morning soundings on KRNN. The reason I really like KRNN is because it is the very best choice in Juneau for favorites of mine like classic rock, world music, and blues. Tune in to KRNN, 102.7 FM or krnn.org. Thanks.
This is Bird Note. It's time to go out and enjoy the great outdoors. Experience nature. Explore. Tell your stories. David Sibley certainly has. He's the creator and illustrator of the Sibley Guide to Birds, one of the most widely used field guides. As a boy, he often explored the outdoors with his father. These weren't birding trips, but rather nature hikes, with someone running ahead to turn over logs and look for mole crickets, identify plants, and watch for birds flying by. We asked David for ways to encourage children to connect with nature.
My advice to other parents is just to get outdoors. And it doesn't have to be about birding. Just go outside and get caught in a rainstorm and get that real firsthand experience with weather. That's all part of it. Just being outdoors is really the key. When I did the Guide to Bird Life and Behavior, the two editors of that book are friends of mine, and we dedicated that book to all of our parents. One of the early versions of the dedication that didn't make it into the book, unfortunately, was thanks to our parents for making us play outside.
Our story continues online at birdnote.org.
PM. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau. One of Capital City's youngest buskers is raising money this week for a good cause. Elementary school student Sophia Nyland can sometimes be seen playing her violin in downtown Juneau with an open violin case to collect money. This week, all proceeds will go to a Juneau family that lost their home to a fire on Friday. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
It's a drizzly Monday afternoon in downtown Juneau. 8-year-old Sophia Nyland stands in front of the new Heritage Coffee Roasting Company Espresso Bar on South Franklin Street, playing the violin. Like any busker in a city, Sophia gets various reactions from people walking by.
I like playing for the people because the people enjoy music, and some people don't like it. They just walk by and go like, meh, they don't really care.
Sophia has been busking since she was 5. She says the money she gets isn't always for her musical talent.
When I was little, everyone liked because I was so adorable.
She once made $120 in one session.
They weren't looking at me playing the violin, they were just looking at me, like my face.
Sophia started wanting to play the violin when she was 3 years old.
I kept asking my mom, and she said, fine, I'll call the teacher and see.
And she said, you know, she's quite young. They don't start this early. But bring her to a group lesson. She will see what a hard work it is to play violin.
That's Ildi Nyland, Sophia's mother.
Well, I took her to the group lesson, and by the end of the lesson, she convinced the teacher to start to teach her. She's quite headstrong in a good way.
Sometimes Sophia plays downtown for an hour. Sometimes she plays for 15 minutes.
Last time she played about 20 minutes, she made $35.
If you ask Sophia, in the past few summers of playing her violin downtown, she's earned
maybe $1 million. I don't know, but I've been doing this a lot.
Her mom says it's more like $200. Sophia puts a lot of it in the bank to save for college, and sometimes, she says, she gets to spend some of it.
Well, I bought this shirt because it's an Under Armour, and I like going hiking a lot, so I got it.
The shirt is black and hot pink. In her hair, she wears a light blue feather.
I like buying girly stuff because I'm a fashionista.
Sophia plays downtown a few times a month, and usually on the weekend, but this week is different.
On Friday, we were driving by the fire, and I saw smoke, and we looked behind us, and we saw a huge fire. It was like flames everywhere.
The single-family home in the Twin Lakes area was destroyed.
The next day after that, I said to my mom, I want to go play my violin for the people that don't have their house anymore.
Owners Amber and Lucas Schneider have three children. Sophia plans on playing for an hour each day this week and will give everything she earns to the family. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
Thanks, Lisa, for that. It's 3:59 p.m. Tonight's forecast in Juneau, numerous showers, patchy fog late, lows around 53, southeast winds at 10 miles an hour in the evening, becoming light and variable. Tomorrow, patchy fog in the morning with numerous showers, becoming scattered in the afternoon, highs in the low 60s with light winds, and tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with isolated showers, lows around 50 with light winds. This is KTOO in Juneau.
This is KTOO Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, and K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable, on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org.
Getting somebody who's sick like that back to 21st century hospital with